You're listening to UK Health Radio, where health means more than the absence of illness. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. I'm Hillary Burns, and each week we explore honest conversations about life, health, and whole person well-being through real stories of resilience, healing, and human connection. This is the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. His name is Dr. John E. Lewis, and he's a past full-time associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, and now voluntary associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. He's also the founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition, which we will be talking about today. And he's a husband, father, entrepreneur, son, athlete, writer, and all-around good guy. So welcome to the studio, John E. Lewis. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm glad you put son in there. That's special. You know, some people don't, but
I only have my mother left. I don't have any other elderly family members left. They've all passed on. So,
oh, and where did you grow up?
I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, my son refs there.
Really?
He's a hockey ref. Yeah, that's one of his stops. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And where do you live now?
I live in Miami. I lived most of my life in Miami.
So when did you go from Knoxville to Miami?
That was 92, and that was 3 days before Hurricane Andrew hit Miami in 1992, at that time was the worst. I believe it was the most destructive hurricane on record financially. I don't know about loss of life, but, and then I think Katrina eclipsed it in 2000, was that 05, 08, something like that. But yeah, what an introduction to South Florida.
Have you bought a house?
No, I had rented an apartment that was completely unable to be moved into for about 4 months. I lived with, at the time, my girlfriend's aunt up in Lake Worth, which is up in Palm Beach County, about an hour away. So she didn't know me from Adam, but she was nice enough to welcome me into her home and gave me a temporary place to live till my apartment came online. But yes, it was just a crazy introduction to South Florida. And I had, of course, growing up in Tennessee, no knowledge or experience with hurricanes, but boy, and I'm not much of a crier. I mean, I don't really, if I'm really sad about something, I can shed a tear. But when my mom and dad and sister all came down. Actually, my sister lived with me that first year. And so mom and dad brought us down here, our cars, our furniture, our clothes, everything. And we were waiting to move into that apartment. And, meanwhile, we have this impending storm. So we ended up fleeing. We had all of our stuff in my dad's truck. We drove all the way up to Orlando. So we didn't actually experience the storm firsthand.
Oh, okay.
But I was in my car. Julie was in her car. We just left the area. We went all the way up to like the Orlando area. And then we stayed up there a couple of days. We came back and it was so just shocking to see the damage to the areas we could even get to. You know, they had police and the National Guard everywhere restricting traffic to really only people who lived in certain areas. But what I could see was so shocking, I cried. I mean, it was that emotional to see how much damage that storm had created. And it just went from there. I mean, again, living up in Palm Beach, you know, I was kind of insulated from all the activity, but even coming down here, so that storm hit on August 24th, and I was coming to the University of Miami to go to school. That was why I moved here.
Wow.
And our semester was almost canceled. We somehow managed to still squeeze it in, like a whole semester's worth of work, and I don't remember now exactly, maybe a month and a half, maybe 2 months. Like I'm pretty sure it was around Thanksgiving when the fall semester started, so you can imagine how difficult it was to try to squeeze a whole semester in that short of time. But we didn't, like in our neighborhood, we didn't have stop signs and traffic lights for a year. I mean, it was chaos, you know.
What happened to your parents? Everybody went down there?
with you?
We did, Mom and Dad just came down to help us move. I mean, they were still living in Tennessee, so they didn't. It was just Julie and me down here dealing.
Julie was your girlfriend or your sister?
No, my sister.
So she went with you. Was she going to school too?
My sister moved here for 1 year, and then she was kind of floundering around trying to figure out what she wanted to do in life. And so Mom and Dad basically made her move back home after a year because she was having difficulty getting her act together. She was only 18 at the time. So a matter of immaturity to some degree, but anyway,
what were you studying? Was that undergrad?
I came down here to do my PhD. I had done my undergrad and master's degree at the University of Tennessee. And then I came to the University of Miami for my PhD.
And what was it in?
It was a combined program in physiology, heavy in statistics, research design. So it was a kind of an amalgam of program, but it was an extension of my physiology training that I had done in my master's degree.
Okay. And what does physiology mean?
Physiology is just the study of every cell in our body. It's how our cells function. It's how our organs function. It's how our organ systems function. Every major organ system. And so it's the study of all of those metabolic pathways, all of that cellular functioning, all of the links between different organ systems. It's really how the body works. It's learning how the body works.
Wow, I never heard of it. I mean, I've heard of physics, but I haven't heard of, physiology. Interesting. Okay. So you were studying that. And then how did you end up, let's see,
at the medical school?
Is that where you ended up when you were? Okay. Okay. Yeah. How did you end up, I guess, in research? I guess you liked research. Oh, what was your PhD on before you move on? What was your thesis?
So my thesis was on looking at different. I mean, it was completely unrelated to what I ended up getting into. But I was told by several mentors at the time, like, don't worry about the topic of your dissertation for your PhD, because that's just something to help you achieve your goal of your degree. It doesn't mean that's what you're going to study for the rest of your life, which was exactly the case for me, because I started working as a student under a psychologist who was conducting a lot of studies in HIV at that time, which, you know, back in the early mid 90s, late 90s, HIV was one of the hottest research topics, obviously getting millions and millions of dollars thrown at it. And so this guy had built out a nice career for himself in HIV. And so I started working under his supervision in his lab. And I ended up conducting a study on HIV risk behavior in college students. Again, it had nothing to do with my real interests in nutrition and exercise, but I didn't care. I just wanted to do a study to help me get my degree and move on in life. Some people get so
that was true. That was what you did for your PhD.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people.
What'd you learn? What'd you learn?
Oh, goodness. Well, you can imagine. I mean, this was over 30 years ago, but you can imagine. I mean, it's the risk of HIV is the same as the risk of any other sexually transmitted disease when you're in your late teens and early 20s, you know, experimenting with alcohol and drugs. Obviously, those are significant risk factors related to whether or not you are in the middle of getting ready to have sex with somebody and then you remember to use a condom or not.
Right.
If you're inebriated, obviously your ability to use a condom may or may not be at the top of your list at that moment. So,
basic stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Just very basic stuff, you know, related to, again, a lot of college students were and still are, you know, using drugs, drinking a lot of alcohol, having a lot of sex. I mean, it wasn't anything world, you know, breaking in. Yeah. It was basically just confirming, you know, what we all do in college and what has been done and what's continuing to be done. No real change.
But not to take us off topic, but I just want to say, when back in the 80s, when I was in college, late 70s, 81, I graduated. I don't think condoms were, we were more focused on not getting pregnant than diseases. And I think Maybe it was around
true.
1991. So condoms weren't as big of a deal. I think it was on the woman to not want to get pregnant. You know, you had your own birth control, but condoms, I think, came out more after HIV, probably.
Right.
You know what I mean? That was like life or death. That wasn't.
But even in my study, like it's exactly what you just said. Students were more concerned about getting the woman pregnant or the girl woman pregnant related to, you know, getting HIV or syphilis or something like that. It was more about not getting somebody pregnant as opposed to being concerned about disease transmission. So,
right. And we were told that condoms weren't effective. So we didn't rely on them. But now that's, if you're responsible, you're using a condom and whatever else, you know?
Well, and the other thing too is, you know, the prevalence or the incidence of HIV in college students was almost zero. I mean, nobody in college was getting HIV. Sure, you might have gotten gonorrhea or syphilis or something like that, something relatively easily treatable, but not HIV. I mean, that
chlamydia.
Was
chlamydia. Was the
chlamydia, exactly. I mean, that was, you know, that was
something that we'd get on this topic, right?
Right, to be concerned about, not HIV. I mean, that was a drug. That was a big man drug user issue.
Yeah.
Not a college student issue.
Yeah, and then it became, oh God, what is it that people pass around now? Well, there was herpes later, and then the other one, HIV. Yeah, that was later. Oof. Anyway, okay. So back to you. So you got your PhD. Nothing brain, you know, no big opening there, but you still got it done, right? And you got your degree. So good for you. All right, and then where'd you go?
So I stayed at the University of Miami. I was offered a position once I graduated as a faculty member in psychiatry, where I enjoyed a relatively long tenure. And that was where I started making connections to really pursue my passion. And that was within the areas of nutrition and exercise and dietary supplements, because those were the things that I thought were most meaningful to my own life personally. And I wanted to figure out how to do that professionally. And so I started making connections, and I had a couple of mentors who helped me, of course, elevate. You know, you always need to rely on people. There's no such thing as one man is an island or one woman is an island. You can't have that attitude in academics. And so eventually I started creating a niche for myself at the medical school, even though we had no center of nutrition or and still today, there at the University of Miami, there is no department or school of nutrition or even center for nutrition. It's just kind of a mishmash of people around the university doing nutrition research. But
So when you were on staff there, were you teaching or you were just doing research? Like, what was your role there?
98% of my time was conducting research studies. The other 2% was related to supervision of students or teaching a lecture here and there or serving on administrative committees.
Okay. So they didn't mind you doing the research on nutrition and exercise, even though they didn't have a department, like they were fine with that?
Well, the fineness issue comes into how much money you can raise.
Like,
you could be doing research on cookies. If you're bringing in millions of dollars, they don't care.
Like, so were you bringing in money?
Of course, or otherwise I wouldn't have lasted that long.
Oh, now where'd you bring it in from? I mean, how does that work?
So money comes through gifts from individuals, contracts from the government, grants from the government, grants from foundations. There are lots of sources of money, but you have to be either a really good person, people person kind of person to, you know, to influence people that way to write you a check, or you have to be a really good grant proposal writer to get unknown people who don't know you from Adam to read your document and say, wow, this guy Lewis has written a compelling proposal. Let's write him a check to do his idea.
And which were you?
Both.
Both?
Yes.
That's amazing. No.
But, you know, but again, that every medical school in the country, there are 130, not that many compared to the total number of colleges and universities. We don't have that many medical schools
Right.
By and large, they're all funded by, guess what? Big Pharma, right? Big Pharma contributes billions of dollars to the education of medical students and to the running of medical schools. And so that's a very conventional, conservative environment that doesn't really care about nutrition and supplements and exercise. So,
right. So then who'd you get the money from? You're not going to get it from Big Pharma, right?
No, I didn't. So again, it came from other sources. It came from foundations. It came from individuals.
Wow.
We got some government funding. We got some institutional funding that was set aside for health and wellness research. I mean, there was not one source per se. It was a whole host of different sources, but it's challenging when you're not part of that. It's not even a click. It is the pathway. So when you decide to go into a research career, if you are interested in pharmaceuticals, or you're interested in genetics, or you're interested in some other type of biotechnology that you can do or make some licensing arrangement with either a big biotech company or a big big pharma company, that's where you have great opportunity to really create a big slush fund for yourself and just kind of, you know, ride that out for the rest of your life. But that, for me, that's selling my soul to the devil. I never had any interest in that.
And now I think we could take our commercial break. And then when we come back, we'll get the rest of the story. All right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right. So you're telling me that the Alzheimer's Association does not want a cure that will help people.
Well,
they're in with Big Pharma. Is that what you're telling me?
Let me answer.
I can't say it.
Well, I will say it. I don't care at this
point. Why would they get rid of you when, I mean, it makes no logical sense to what you're saying.
Well, first of all, no one got rid of me. I resigned from academia.
But I mean, they weren't like you were on cloud when you said you're on cloud nine. You thought you're just going to get all this funding because what you're doing is making a huge difference. And what happened instead?
So we published this first article in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease in 2013. This was, and I'm kind of jumping ahead. I didn't even really describe the study, but may I describe the study first? And then it
sure
came on to your listeners.
I'm writing down 2013, so we can go back there. Okay, yeah. I'm a jumper. Oh, sorry about that.
So my one of my dearest, one of the most dear people in my life is a gentleman by the name of Dr. Reg McDaniel, who is Dr. Reg, I believe, turned 89 this year, still goes to his office every day.
Oh,
he's just an amazing man. He, 40 years ago, speaking of HIV, 40 years ago, when he was running his pathology unit in a hospital in Dallas, he had 10 guys come to him who had HIV. They were taking this allo product and they had no viral load and their CD4 cells were normal. Total medical heresy. Like you can't describe, you can't explain that from a medical convention.
And they got that from him, from Dr. Reg.
Well, they were taking this product that Reg knew nothing about. Because Reg is a pathologist, they wanted Reg's explanation for why this aloe vera product was keeping them essentially disease free, which to knowledge, you know, to anyone's knowledge at that time in 1985, nothing could do that. So why was this aloe vera product able to do that? And Reg, being the true Texan that he is, thought he was being pranked basically and, you know, kept shooing them out of his office. But thankfully, they would not take no for an answer. And so Reg ultimately started researching why this aloe product was so incredibly beneficial against HIV. And as it turned out, he and his veterinarian friends at Texas A&M, he couldn't get any of his physician friends interested because, as you know, the typical physician has virtually no interest in nutrition.
Right.
But veterinarians typically have more of an interest in nutrition to, you know, to keep their customers' livestock healthy. Well, anyway, what they discovered was that this aloe polysaccharide was incredibly anti-infectious, meaning that it was able to help the cells in our body counteract or defend the host. In this case, they were running a lot of animal studies against any kind of viral infection, especially HIV, hepatitis. They looked at a number of different viruses back in those days. So fast forward 20 years later, he and I meet. This is in the early 2000s. And we met through a mutual friend at the University of Miami. And I'm talking to this man. I'm just meeting him. And he's telling me about all this fascinating stuff that he's done for the last 20 years and with aloe vera polysaccharides or aloe sugars. And I'm like, what in the world is this guy talking about? Like, I know aloe vera is good for a sunburn. But other than that, you know, I don't know anything. And so he's giving me like this crash course on these sugars and aloe vera. And I'm like, sugar? Like, wow, that's so fascinating. And I'm the kind of person that I'm very open-minded. Like, I will listen to someone's story. If I think it makes sense or if I think it sounds good, then I'm good with it. Like, it doesn't, you know, I can be told almost anything. If I believe the person, then, you know, for me, it's okay. And so anyway, Reg and I create a very strong, fast relationship. Like, he kind of just takes me under his wing, and we both have this underlying interest in health and wellness and nutrition. And so, Hillary, I start learning. I mean, he just bombarded me with documents. I mean, he sent me, literally, he got back to Dallas, and he emails me this big, giant box of articles of all this stuff that's been published on aloe vera. And I'm like, whoa, like, you know, it just blew me away. And so one thing led to another. One day he's speaking at a conference and he's talking about some of the work that he was doing at that time with people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And there happened to be a lady in the audience who had lost 4 family members to Alzheimer's disease. So she comes up to Dr. Reg after the lecture. She and her husband eventually form a relationship with him. And they say, wow, you know what you're doing is incredible. We've got some money. They were in the oil and gas business also in Texas. And so they say, we'd love to make a donation to help you in research. The only requirement we want to make is that it has to be conducted in Alzheimer's disease because of our family, you know, personal experience with it. So Reg, not being affiliated with any university or research organization at that time, he calls me up one day and he says, John, we've got an opportunity to run a trial using the aloe polysaccharides. We just need to do it with people with Alzheimer's. Well, of course, South Florida is full of older folks. And a lot of older folks with Alzheimer's, like, no problem. Like, we've got, unfortunately for us, we have a lot of people here with Alzheimer's. And so that's how this whole study came into being, even just because of the generosity of this one family. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't even be sitting here talking to you. Mm. So we run the study. We have, you know, again, lots of people here with the disease. We run the study. We're getting phenomenal responses as we run the study. Like, I'm literally getting, caregivers calling me in tears. People calling me in tears saying, I cannot believe what my wife, my mother, my grandmother, Dr. Lewis, you cannot believe what they're doing now. Like, in some cases, in years that the person affected was now talking about things or doing things that he or she had not done. And again, in some cases, for years. So we get to the end of the study. It takes about 2.5 years to run the study. We ran the trial. We put them on this supplement, again, that we now call Daily Brain Care. It was a 1 year intervention. We assessed their cognitive function at baseline, 3, 6, 9, and 12 months. We drew their blood at baseline and 12 months because we wanted to look at a lot of different biomarkers, particularly related to immune function and inflammation. And then we had this, as you can imagine, this gigantic amount of data at the end of the process. So as we're starting to analyze the data after we've conducted the study, Dr. Reg and I are both like, we got to look at that cognitive data. Like, that's the first thing we want to look at. And there's something called the ADAS-COG. I don't know if you've heard of it, but that is considered to be the gold standard for assessing cognitive function, especially among people with dementia. And for our listeners, just to make sure that you're clear, cognitive function is much more than just short-term or long-term memory. It's a whole host of attributes around how your mind functions. So that's related to your executive functioning ability. Can you balance your checkbook? Can you make a grocery list? It's related to your recall ability. Do you remember when you came into the house and put your keys, where your keys are located? It's related to your processing speed. How quickly can I give you a list of items and then you repeat those back to me? It's related to your spatial orientation and awareness. Do you know where you are? Do you know what time it is? Do you know the season of the year? There are a whole host of things that go into cognitive function. So it's much more than just short-term and long-term memory. At 9 and 12 months, listen to this very carefully. At 9 and 12 months, we showed clinically and statistically significant improvement in cognitive function in people with moderate to severe Alzheimer's disease. That is unheard of. There is nothing else in the scientific literature that even comes close to that. Not the 5 FDA-approved drugs for dementia, not any kind of diet, no other dietary supplement, not exercise, hyperbaric oxygen, red light therapy, acupuncture, sound therapy, music therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy. There is nothing else in the scientific literature that shows what we showed. That was on cloud 9.
Okay, got it. Okay, now we need to take our commercial break. All right, this is very exciting. Be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right. Want to make sure they hear about what you're doing and where to go find it and stuff.
Yes, please. No, because it's very important. So I still have a voluntary affiliation with the university, although I've changed departments from psychiatry to family medicine. But my whole focus now, Hillary, is taking this research that we've conducted. We didn't even talk about the multiple sclerosis study yet. We've only really scratched the surface on the Alzheimer's study. But Daily Brain Care is the result of those two clinical trials that have 7 papers published, 4 from the Alzheimer's study, 3 from the MS study, that support a product that helps people. And I want people to understand the value of Daily Brain Care and how it can make a difference in every person's life. And you don't have to be sick. You don't even have to have a neurodegenerative condition to benefit from it. I have been on this formula for over a decade. My mother's been on it for over 13 years. My wife started taking it when she was pregnant with our first child. Our children have been on it since they were 5 and 6 months of age. So this is cradle to grave and all of us in between, simply because these polysaccharides, especially from aloe vera, nobody eats aloe vera. And even if you drank the gel, it's 99% water. So you're getting like a smidge of the polysaccharides. But we've done the hard work for you. We've put it into daily brain care, into a consumable amount that will have a therapeutic effect. And again, you don't have to be sick or impaired to benefit from it. You want to prevent bad things from happening to you in the first place. So my obsession in life is my last breath will be talking about our research and how these polysaccharides are arguably the most beneficial nutrients that Mother Nature provides for us. And that is my mission, to help people. I want to touch at least 1 million lives. That is my company's goal. And I'm well on my way to that. But thanks to, you know, folks like yourself and helping me spread the word, I take advantage of every opportunity to be on someone's show, to go to conferences and lecture, to be on TV, on radio, whatever the media opportunity is. But I am trying to get the word out as much as I can about how beneficial and how amazing these polysaccharides from aloe vera and rice bran are, and just how much people can benefit from them. That is my mission and my obsession in life.
And what do they, I mean, can you say it in a layman's term, like what they do to help?
So,
or not?
Absolutely. So think about the three things that I mentioned, besides the cognitive effect, think about the three cellular effects that I mentioned in our Alzheimer's study in that first paper. The first one is improving your overall immune system's functioning. How important is it to have a well-regulated, surveillant, active, proactive immune system? It is vitally important. The immune system talks to every other major organ system. I like to use the analogy of the symphony orchestra, and the immune system is like the conductor. The conductor keeps the symphony playing music correctly and balancing all the different strings and drums and different components of the music. The immune system does the same thing with our cardiovascular system, our central nervous system, our skeletal muscular system. It's keeping everything in balance. And if it's not functioning properly, you cannot possibly expect the rest of your body to be functioning in balance and in harmony. So it's a very important component to our overall well-being, not just protecting us from infection. Number two, inflammation. We cannot even consider any branch of medical science or health science today without acknowledging the role of inflammation in all of these chronic diseases that are killing us. Now, we need inflammation when we're in a car accident, when we have some kind of trauma, when we're dealing with a bacteria or a virus. We need the acute inflammation. Otherwise, we would die. That's a very important component, again, to our immune system, how we have something happen to us, and then we have all of these cells that rush to that area to help us to repair from that and recover from that. And all those little factors that are going on, those little healing factors, are very significantly regulated by our immune system. But when the trauma is repaired, when we're over the infection, if we still have those signalers going, that's where it becomes chronic inflammation. And that's why we want to keep all of that regulated and in its place. So that's number two. And then finally, number three, adult stem cell production. We hear all the time about, you know, using stem cells lots of times in the case of either osteoarthritis or other pain-related conditions, where somebody takes some type of stem cell, injects it into that area, and then you get the healing effect. Well, we have our own internal mechanisms for creating stem cells. That's why we live day to day. That's one of the hallmarks of just living through life, is that the body is constantly replicating itself. Unfortunately, when we get to about the age of 25, all of that starts slowly declining for the rest of our lives. As I mentioned, these people in our study were 79.9 years of age on average. We shot that up by almost 300%, like nothing else. So imagine turning on all of that adult stem cell production capacity again, where the body says, wait a minute, I'm dealing with all this damage. let me start repairing that. And so that's a very significant contributor to helping get somebody's quality of life back to where they want it to be. So those are just three examples of the way these polysaccharides, in general, what the way we can think of them is like signaling mechanisms to the immune system. Our immune system is so incredibly adaptable and vital, but it needs the right materials. And remember, the one component I didn't mention about this is that everything that we take in, and these polysaccharides are literally the most complex, not only are they the most complex sugars, they are the most complex nutrients known to humanity at this point. They are like 5D structures that you cannot even draw on a piece of paper. They are that complex and that dense. When our genes interpret that, as we put that into our system, our genes interpret that, and then they guide our cells in how to function properly. And we know every time the cell does something, the mitochondria gets all the publicity because we think of the mitochondria as our powerhouse for our cell, which is true. But we have other organelles in our body, in our cells, that do things. The endoplasmic reticulum talks to the Golgi, and when it does that, it's creating something like a cytokine or a growth factor, one of these proteins that I mentioned that are looked at for inflammation. But it's also when it says, wait a minute, we're being infected by a bacteria, we need to go handle that. Or when it says, I'm dying, I need to replicate myself. Or when it comes in contact with another cell and it says, hi, cell, how are you? What are you doing today? Okay, let's work together. Every time those processes occur, it needs these polysaccharides in certain amounts to be able to make those processes happen. So again, these nutrients are like nothing else that Mother Nature provides for us, these that come from aloe vera and rice bran. The only other thing in my experience, from what I know, is curcumin. I would put relatively on that same level as being another very dynamic and special nutrient or phytonutrient. But I am telling you, there is nothing else like these polysaccharides from aloe vera and rice bran. And I have just seen it time and time again, not just with people with neurodegeneration, but in all sorts of different health issues and health challenges. And let me also conclude that thought by just saying that please no one say that Lewis said you could use nutrition to treat disease. I am not saying that at all. Pharmacology treats disease. That is Big Pharma's domain. Nutritional science says you provide the raw materials that the cells need to function properly as guided by the genes to allow the body to repair, restore, and heal itself and return to homeostasis. That's the inherent intelligence that the body uses with nutrition, and that's the nutritional model. So I am not saying that we are treating disease with daily brain care or any kind of nutrition. I am saying daily brain care supports the cells and how to function properly as guided by our genes.
Wow. I don't want to get us off time. We only have a couple minutes, but who discovered it in the first place that those guys had taken it and gone to Reg?
So that was
quite a long story, but
that was the company that was founded by another guy that had a long interest in aloe vera. And it was just a small collective group of individuals. I mean, we know humans. I mean, just, you know, in the Bible, aloe vera is referenced a couple of times in the Bible. So humans have been using aloe vera for millennia. It's just that most of the time when you think of aloe vera, you think of the gel for a sunburn or a cut or a wound. But when you take those polysaccharides orally, it blows the topical purpose away. It is like taking it, you know, to 10 degrees higher, if you will, or more in terms of its effectiveness.
And where do they grow it? Where do you get it from?
So aloe vera is grown in pretty much all subtropical regions. The company that I work with grows it in Hainan Island off the coast of China and in Mexico.
Wow. Wow. All right. So what would you like to leave people with? I mean, obviously they saw that video, they saw proof, you have proof, they can read your paper. I guess they can go to your website and get all that, right? What website can you
say? So our website is drlewisnutrition.com. That's our best source of information. It's got a lot of really excellent information about all the research, the ingredients in the product, the story of my life, why I'm doing this. I mean, this is my life. This is my life's work. This wasn't some idea I had in the shower one night to, you know, make money. This is my life's work. And if people don't want to read all that information or watch all those testimonial videos, they can find us on all the typical social media channels under the Dr. Lewis Nutrition handle and see, you know, short posts, quick videos, kind of just, you know, the quick hitters, if you will. But we can be contacted by email, by phone, on our website. I'm an open book. I mean, I just want to help people, and I want to make it as freely available to people as I can in terms of helping people. And you can find Daily Brain Care both in powder and capsule form on our website. You can find it in on Amazon as well. And my goal is to touch at least 1 million lives. And so hopefully a lot of the folks listening to you and me today will be part of that million, and they will see very quickly how beneficial this product can be for both them and their loved one and anybody else in their circuit.
Wow. And they could just try it for a month, see how they feel?
Try it for a month, try it for two. You know, sometimes people get a little impatient. We live in such an instant gratification society, but you know, nutrition takes time. This isn't like you get a headache and then you take Tylenol and 15 minutes later your headache's gone. You got to give the body time to work, right? Like you've got to give it a bit of time in most cases. Although I will tell you, one customer last night told me literally within his first dose in 10 minutes, he already started feeling like he was more focused. So he's a super responder. There are about 20 or 30% of people who will have a really, really rapid response, but most people will take 30, 45, 60 days, somewhere in there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you sharing your genius and what you've discovered and your passion. And just thank you for doing this. And thank you for not being stopped by those elements that tried to stop you.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I will be happy to come back anytime.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, take a moment to reflect, share, or simply be with what you heard. Until next time, this is Hillary Burns, inviting you to stay curious, stay connected, and keep getting real.